Welcome to the Regulation Podcast, brought to you by the Institute of Regulation. This is the fourth episode in this new series of podcasts, and once again, we hope to help you understand what regulation is all about, what it's all for, and of course, why it matters to the public. My name is Anthony Oliver, and I'm going to lead today's discussion on the language of regulation, its impact on society, and on the need to build stronger links between regulation practitioners and academia. And as usual, I hope we can also find out a little bit more about the new Institute of Regulation and how it can help the sector to move forward. So let me introduce my guest today, Grant Pink, Managing Director of Recap Consultants based in Canberra, Australia. Thanks for joining me on the Regulation Podcast.
Thanks very much, Anthony. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Grant is without question an authority on the subject of regulatory practice and its impact on good or more effective regulation. Having practiced for 30 years, he now spends his time between regulatory consulting as a professorial appointment in regulation and enforcement at the University of Tasmania and has over 30 published articles in the sector. And last year, Grant published the now well-thumbed book, Navigating Regulatory Language, an A to Z Guide, about which I'm sure we'll hear a bit more later. Well, Grant, as I say, you've more than 30 years experience working in regulatory and enforcement as a practitioner, as a manager, executive, senior executive, academic and consultant at, of course, local, state, national and international levels. So in your words, what's the point of regulation? What are the benefits to society and to the politicians driving policy delivery?
Well, I think there's a few things in there, Anthony. To your first point, regulation is fundamentally a means and mechanism for government to change behaviours to those that are required or desired, as opposed to those that are socially unacceptable. I think also in relation to or considering the benefits to society, most benefits tend to be framed around terms of public value, public good, or public benefit. And they also include and span what are economic, environmental, and social aspects. And finally, I think putting my mind to the politicians and driving policy delivery, regulators often have a challenging role educating and reminding the politicians about what regulation can and in fact should do. So to help clarify this, there's been an increase around the world in the use of ministerial statements of expectations. So that is the ask from the ministers and regulatory statements of intent. So the response from regulators.
Okay, well, it's certainly been an evolving area over the last 30 years. And I suppose, in your words, I mean, any pitfalls to be aware of? Any specific lessons that you've learned over the last few decades?
Well, firstly, you're absolutely right, Anthony. Regulation, regulating and regulatory practice have been evolving for some time now. And I've deliberately listed and distinguished between regulation, regulating and regulatory practice because they mean and involve very different things to various groups, parts of government and society. And for example, I would say regulation can evoke concerns around red tape and regulatory burdens. So they're the things that stifle and frustrate business and commerce. Whereas regulating tends to involve people thinking about the interactions that they have with regulatory bodies and relating more to the interactions with the regulator around implementation and regulatory delivery. Whereas finally, regulatory practice, I think, is perhaps where the Institute of Regulation is going to be focusing its initial efforts, which I suspect will involve building regulatory capability and capacity for what is in some sectors still emerging profession. And I think I'd also say in terms of the lessons learned, I think over the last 30 years, we've seen a move from command and control and prescriptive regulation, which had connotations of policing and, or if you like, clipboard and checklist carrying inspectors who were just out to find breaches and penalise regulated entities, to now contemporary regulation and regulatory practices that are much more nuanced. They involve closer working relationships with, and in some instances even involve partnering with regulated entities, industries, and peak industry bodies. And I think perhaps instead of specific lessons learned, I would note, like most established or emerging professions, that I think regulators are now involved in continuous and iterative improvement.
Okay, it is, as you say, a fascinating, incredibly complex area, but certainly one which I know that the Institute of Regulation is going to be very well placed to try to help with. I mean, but you're obviously speaking to us from Canberra. You have got specific lessons from Australia, and your last role was the Centre of Leadership and Learning with the Australian Public Services Commission. essentially there you were trying to upskill public sector, their regulatory function. When you were doing that, what were the challenges there? Did you succeed?
Well, success has many fathers and its failure that's an orphan. But yes, you're correct. That was my last posting. And I think for context for the listeners, like most Westminster systems, the Australian Public Service, like your civil service equivalent, broadly operates across three domains, those being policy and programmatic. Programmatic often involves or is described as service delivery, and finally regulation. So while the policy and programmatic domains have been mainstream for some time, and most public servants identified with those functions and roles, and perhaps more critically, their senior managers and executives identified with those roles. Whereas conversely, when we looked at regulation, it had not been mainstreamed. It was seen as something that those people in the hall do behind the keypad and secure doors. So there was a lot of misconception. And I think that was due to people often hearing regulation, but interpreting it as enforcement. So I think on that point, ironically and somewhat frustratingly, even to this day, we still see public or civil servants in what are clearly regulatory agencies who do not identify as being engaged in or supporting regulatory functions. So whether it was a success, well, we've rolled out some programs. There's several thousand people have undertaken it. I think the uplift about what regulation is and what regulatory practice is has definitely moved on as in heading in a healthy trajectory in Australia.
Okay, thanks. I mean, it's very clear, you know, there are some very specific terms and some very specific language. And we're going to talk about your recent book, The Language of Regulation. So it's clearly getting that language and getting those terminologies and getting those job roles really clear is very important. But just to tee that up and suppose and set the scene, the book is described as a repository of information facilitating greater consistency in the use of regulatory language. I mean, why, given what you've just said, why is that necessary?
Well, simply put, I think the book does aim to be or provide a repository for regulatory language, and that's because one didn't exist. And I thought a repository or something like it was necessary because, personally, I'd read far too many regulatory reports and articles which contained a glossary of terms, usually with 10 to 15 words, terms or phrases, and for me there were three problems which were generated by this approach. Firstly, there was often an equal number, if not more, acronyms. So we started to chase rabbit down holes from minute one. Secondly, the focus of these words privileged differences across regulatory domains and sectors. And then when combined, these first two points introduced greater inconsistency instead of more consistency. So what would happen is regulators would spend an inordinate amount of time discussing and, in fact, debating how they were special, different and unique. And that wasn't helpful, especially at a time where regulatory agencies are increasingly working together. A greater understanding of each other's roles was necessary, and language was a pathway to that.
But I suppose the reality is that most sectors, industries have their own kind of language issues, whether it's engineering, whether it's medicine, that are challenged. I mean, give us an example of the kind of language challenge that you see day in, day out in the regulation sector.
Well, I'd start with the two sets of words that are actually on the cover of the book. They were ones which kept coming up time and time again as I have my discussions with regulators and, in fact, was developing the book. So the first set is regulation, compliance and enforcement. Now, there's often confusion and conflation around what these words mean, where they start, where they stop and where they overlap. So, for example, to talk you through that, regulation can be both a process and an activity. Compliance is both a process and a point in time, and enforcement is both a process and an outcome, but can equally be seen as a tool. The second set on the cover is engage, educate, and enforce. Now, they are all key activities that all regulatory agencies engage into, you know, greater or lesser extent, but they do so in different orders and often with different outcomes being sought. So I firmly believe that perspective and context are critical for regulators. But I suppose hot button words for me, anyone who's heard me speak before will know that I think customer and client are extremely problematic for regulators. For that reason, I prefer the term regulated entity, but I'll self-edit now, Anthony, and I won't go on because otherwise that'll chew up the rest of this time we have today. But in terms of trajectory, I think regulatory posture, regulatory stewardship, and regulatory outcomes are perhaps three concepts or words that are increasingly being discussed, unpacked, and contextualised by regulators presently.
Okay, thanks, Grant. And we're going to get into that book and some of the ideas in it in a bit later on. But first, let's talk about the Institute of Regulation. I know you've been a great supporter during the foundation of the Institute. I mean, how do you see this new organisation helping the world of regulation?
I think, I suppose, in terms of disclosure and context, regulatory networks were the focus of my master's research. And I've also helped establish, maintain and transition regulatory networks in Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and even internationally. So from both a research and lived experience perspective, I'm firmly of the view that the Institute of Regulation will help regulators in a number of key ways. Firstly, via networking. You know, they'll be able to network with each other across what are generic regulatory issues. So think here about the policies and the procedures and recruiting and upskilling staff that all regulators need to do, irrespective of, you know, domain, sector, or jurisdiction. And then the next level of fidelity is around communities of practice. So that's where we get into things which are more about the art than the science. So if you think about the artisan craftsman, you've been trained, you know how to do the job, but how do you do it when it's a tricky job? How do you do it when it's got extra complexity? So, but fundamentally, regulation is hard. Regulation can be a lonely job. You don't tend to get too many awards for being a regulator. So just the fact that it exists, it provides an opportunity and a place for regulators to, you know, convene and discuss and learn from and support each other.
Okay, and I know that you talk about this need to build stronger links between regulation practitioners and academia. Why is that so important, and what might IOR's role be in making it happen faster?
Well, I think, firstly, practitioners and academics, you know, quite understandably have different roles, and therefore they come to and are drawn to regulatory issues from very different perspectives. So having been a practitioner, you know, they need to and are drawn to the more practical and operational aspects of regulation. So I tend to describe those as regulatory practice and regulatory delivery. You know, very, very simply put, it's the regulatory do. Regulation is a contact sport, and they're in the game. Whereas academics, conversely, you know, focus more on the regulatory theory. They are distanced from it. They will research it. They'll see it as an experiment. So it's a theoretical concept to a large extent for them. But the reality is both are required. They're not mutually exclusive, and they can and should, in fact, leverage off each other's strengths. So how can IR make that happen and make it happen faster? I just think make sure there's fora or parts of fora where practitioners and academics can exchange notes.
A place where they can play together in safety, I imagine, something like that. Let's talk about the language of regulation. Your latest book, you say it's designed to clarify or narrow issues so that regulators can communicate more effectively and efficiently. Again, why is this needed? And what's the problem today then?
Well, if you think about all professions, it's important that they can communicate effectively and efficiently with each other, irrespective of their disciplines. And I think the best example is one that you've already actually touched upon, Anthony, and that's the medical profession. You know, I think medical profession, engineers, lawyers, they're the big three we tend to talk about. But if I focus on the medical profession, if you think about paramedics, nurses, doctors, surgeons, you know, they rely on an ability to communicate clearly, consistently, and effectively across different systems, procedures, and a range of issues. And they do so to advance the health outcomes of the patient. Now, I believe the same should go for regulators. They should be able to, and in fact, need to narrow the issues and communicate more effectively and efficiently. Otherwise, they will be ineffective as they pursue regulatory outcomes on behalf of and for the benefit of society. So it's a no-brainer for me. They have to get into this space.
Okay, and I'm sure you'd say that the book will help them, but it's clearly more than a simple dictionary of terms. I mean, you say the book is trying to help regulation professionals by clarifying and narrowing issues, but also to create a more contextualized conversation to take place. I mean, tell us about this contextualized conversation. In what kind of issue or conversation is it that you're referring to there?
Well, I think on the first issue of being a dictionary, very early in the book, I think it's around page 8 or 9, you know, I explain that it's not intended to be a dictionary per se. And the reason for this is that many of these regulatory words, terms, and concepts are not universally agreed. So instead, my intent was to come up with a definition that firstly avoided, you know, any definitions that were clearly incorrect or misleading, and instead have a definition that provided a useful basis for a discussion to occur. for a discussion to occur amongst regulators, irrespective of their agency, role or function. And then for them to go deeper and have a meaningful and purposive discussion to advance regulatory practice and the regulatory outcomes that they were individually and perhaps collectively, you know, pursuing.
Well, let's talk about that phrase, improving regulatory outcomes, because, I mean, how do you describe that concept? You know, what for you is an improved regulatory outcome?
Well, maybe before we get to improve, I'll go back to regulatory outcome itself. So, you know, a regulatory outcome are those outcomes that a regulator or regulatory agency has been charged with achieving or advancing for the community. You know, so it's really important that regulators can ensure that their regulatory outcomes are clearly defined and achievable. They're also within their regulatory legislative mandate, and they're able to be articulated and justified to regulated entities, co and peer regulators, stakeholders, and the wider community. And, you know, to that extent, they need to be aligned with the broader strategic context and the options that are available, you know, for them to implement their regulatory work. So, but in the book, if you've seen it, or those that have seen it, Anthony, like there's a description of regulatory outcomes, but at the bottom of it, there's see also in brackets. So there's some other words, terms, and concepts that are cross-referenced. Now, for this example of regulatory outcomes, those other words include annual operational plans, the word operational, regulatory activities, regulatory mandate, regulatory objectives, regulatory strategy, and what is, you know, perhaps strategic and tactical. So all of these words in their own right combine to impact upon regulatory outcomes. So to improve regulatory outcomes, there first of all has to be an understanding of what a regulatory outcome is, and also the various factors that impact upon that. Otherwise, you know, we are shooting in the dark, and regulators will find themselves engaged in a lot of activity, but not a lot of productivity.
Okay. So just to finish off with, I mean, what do you think are the key future regulatory issues that are likely to appear on the horizon across the UK?
Oh, gosh, I'd love to have the crystal ball. But I think the uncertainty and unpredictability of the last 3 years, you know, have taught us all that it's difficult to predict. So instead, what I am more confident about is that I would suggest that responses to any future regulatory issues will involve the need for greater clarity around the regulatory outcomes that we spoke about. There'll be a need for greater levels of collaboration across and amongst co and peer regulators, and clearly IOR has a role to play there. We'll need to have layered and sequenced use of regulatory and enforcement responses, and, you know, an increased requirement for regulatory professionals to use their regulatory judgment. And I think finally, a greater commitment to regulatory stewardship, which involves, you know, taking a holistic whole of system or ecosystem approach to regulation.
Brilliant. I mean, do you think we're in a better place today than the sector was when you started 30 years ago?
Oh, look, yes, most definitely it is. And I think to a large extent, this is due to the coordination, support and leadership provided by regulatory networks. So on that point, perhaps my final comment or call to action is for regulators to join and become actively involved in the Institute of Regulation, because as a regulatory profession, we are much better together.
Brilliant. Well, Grant, thank you very much for joining me today on the Regulation Podcast. There's some really interesting regulation challenges facing the UK. Very interesting challenges facing the UK, full stop, to be quite honest. But thanks for joining us today. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and your perspective from Australia.
Thank you, Anthony. I really enjoyed it. It was great talking to you. And thank you also to the Institute of Regulation for the opportunity to be part of this podcast series. And I really do hope that listeners have found it beneficial and, most importantly, applicable to their regulatory practice. Thank you.
Thanks, Grant. And if you haven't secured your copy of Grant's latest book, I'm sure that it's available in time for Christmas. So go and get a copy of it right now. We have more regulation podcasts planned and more guests to talk to as we continue to get stuck into some of the big issues faced across the sector. If you haven't done so already, do check out the new Institute of Regulation website, www.ioregulation.org, where you'll find a huge amount of really useful information about the Institute, how you can get involved, and of course about the issues and challenges facing regulation. And of course, you will find details of the next podcast, which will be with you very soon. So thanks again for joining us, and thank you again to Grant. And on behalf of the Institute of Regulation, I look forward to seeing you again very soon.